I'm Gabriel Ash. I write on yellowtimes.org regularly. I teach the history of Palestinian-Israeli conflict for activists and activists sustained in New York City. Stop U.S. tax-funded aid to Israel. This is a very common thing, of course. I didn't give any statistics, and I don't have right now in my mind, but of course this was just one day in one military court. I think there were about at least 20 people whose case was heard in this one case, one day in court. So this, you know, there are thousands of people that are in the pipeline all the time. It's a machine, you know, it's a machine justice. It's a conveyor belt trial. They're brought there. Nothing is basically heard. The defense is very mechanical because they know that there's no point in wasting money into trying to challenge the machine. And so they go along with usually whatever is being demanded of them. And that's how it works.
How many of the Palestinians, you said around 20, were represented by a lawyer?
That's the interesting thing. Almost all of them are represented by a lawyer in principle. That's for the part of the showmanship here. They're very, like the guy I wrote about, he had a lawyer, the lawyer didn't come, it didn't matter. So as long as there is officially a lawyer, that's okay. In principle, a lot, you know, there's these lawyers that are, you know, this is not people who can afford a lot of legal work. So they kind of go through lawyers that are hired either by the Palestinian Authority or by sometimes one of the organizations or human rights organizations that work in Jerusalem and hire lawyers and stuff like that. So they have lawyers, but, you know, very limited resources. And also knowing that, you know, the lawyers are not really expected to do much because the system is not really responsive and the prosecution gets everything they want. This guy, we don't know, you know, what we know from his family and what we know that he said to the lawyer, he was held in jail for about 2 months before the trial, before the press charge, before they told them what he was charged with. You know, he was treated with sleep deprivation and all other kinds of hardship. They threatened to do all kinds of things to his family, including destroying his house. His wife just had a baby and all stuff like that. And this went along for about 2 months before they got all kinds of confessions, whose value we don't really know yet because the lawyer, I'm still waiting for to hear from the lawyer about what exactly he confessed to, you know, how strong is the case against him and stuff like that. And again, this is a person who lost all of his land about a few months ago to the wall, and who refused to leave the land and was essentially taken from the land by force when they came to bulldoze his olive trees. He was part of the resistance to the wall in the area near Kirkiria. And soon after that, he was arrested and charged with giving all kinds of material help to a military attack that didn't happen. The charges appear immediately after the wall was built, and basically almost all his land was confiscated.
What kind of evidence was presented by the prosecution to justify these claims?
As far as we know, only his admission.
Can you describe the confession process?
I can't really describe the confession process in this particular case because I didn't get a full reading of what he confessed to have done. And that's the lawyer has to come back to me. But basically the system, this is how the system works, is they interrogate him, they torture him by various methods, depending on the case. And in this case, it was mostly sleep deprivation and threats to the family. And then they ask him all kinds of questions, and then they write a statement and make him read it, and then sign it. and they videotape that. And then they repeat the process again and again and again, either on different subjects, sometimes on the same subject. If they're not happy with what he has said, so they do it again and again, until they're happy.
And this is not an isolated case, right?
No, that's how the Shabbat works all the time. Of course, it's not an isolated case. It happens all the time. Almost every Palestinian who passes through the justice system tells about this process, one way or another. Basically, the system is very old. Starts with the from 48, and where it is applied mostly to Palestinians with Israeli citizenship in the Galilee, which is under military rule, and that's where the system is built, essentially. And then it is refined. And over time, the most important change was all kinds of legal limitation on the amount of torture that can be applied. And there was a whole transition. There was a point in which torture was officially legalized, and then it was delegalized again. And now I don't know what's going on with this, but there's hardcore torture has decreased since the Oslo process, because immediately after the Oslo process, I think the Supreme Court intervened for the first time, saying there's a very limited amount of torture that can be applied. They call it moderate physical pressure,
yes.
Which and so they focused on a series of procedures that the Supreme Court has so far chosen that are not considered torture in Israel, though they are considered torture in most other places. That includes extreme sleep deprivation, shaking, which is, holding a person and just shaking him again and again and again, tying up a person in extremely uncomfortable positions for extremely long time, using stench, dirt, lack of condition, stuff like that, loud noise, all these things that are not, that fall short of applying the physical pain, but that over time are, of course, extremely, extremely painful psychologically and disabled of the personality. So all these things are not considered torture in Israel. They're considered torture by every other international sensible legal understanding of what consists of torture.